Evan wears a lot of hats. If you're in a smaller organization, you probably know what that's like. Developing a lead generation strategy, creating and managing a team of reps, and handing over the process as you grow can be as difficult as they are crucial to success. Evan is the head of business development for VoxGen, a company dedicated to interactive voice response, also known as IVR. His role has led him to have experience in growing both sales and teams. In this podcast, Evan reveals how making sure the process is right before handing off that coveted opportunity, the benefits of testing and reiterating your process, which we also call optimizing, how to deal with difficult cultures in a multinational operation. Now, Evan's experience is in both Europe and US, and tips for defining your ideal buyer and using that data to start conversations.
Okay, everybody. I have a great guest this week. It's Mary Lou Tyler, Predictable Prospecting. And I'm speaking with Evan Jones, who's the head of business development for a company called VoxGen, V-O-X-G-E-N. They are a global company located both in the United States and in Europe. And Evan and I crossed paths a couple of years ago now, I think. And I've been really impressed with the work that he's done in business development. And I wanted to share his experiences with you guys so that you can hear from him firsthand of what he's been through, where he started, and what he's now implementing under the quote-unquote business development umbrella for his company. So without further ado, Evan, it's very nice to have you on the show, and I'm very happy that we were able to get this done. It's great.
Yes, long overdue. Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us, Evan, what it is that you're doing with VoxGen now and how you got started in this role and, you know, what you've done. I know you've ebbed and flowed and done a number of different things. As you probably will tell the folks, that you've worn a lot of hats in this company and other companies that you've worked with, and really get an to help our audience get an understanding of all of the levers that you've had to pull in working for business development.
Sure. So as the head of business development, as Mary Lou, just as you said, I've kind of, we're not a big organization, about 40 or so or more people. But you know, with that size, you have to essentially play a few different roles and the like. The good thing is you pick up a lot of skills that go into the lead generation process, how you can refine the message. More on that in a little bit. But I essentially oversee all things related to lead generation, even into some marketing aspects and into post-lead gen of selling, managing some of our strategic accounts, bringing on new ones, and the like. So I have a team of five SDRs, BDRs, you know, inside sales representatives, whatever term you want to use, that we follow an outreach program focused on trying to find the right person. And of course, a sequence of, and really a process and structure of trying to identify the right people in the organization, gather interest, whether it be through exploration, a project, or, you know, some of the work that we've done pre-conversation. Kind of going back to this, I had gotten my start along with my colleague, Nick Scaglione, as an inside sales representative myself, understanding, making the calls, understanding the nature of contact, understanding motivations of why they want to get on the phone with you or talk to you or anything similar, why they would reach back out. And I wanted to really apply that to some of the, of essentially the sales organization of what we're doing now. So I'm sure we're going to be talking about it throughout the length of this podcast, but it's really great stuff. And, you know, we have the predictable revenue, Mary Lou's process really to, you know, shine as the key example of how lead generation should be done.
Well, you know, you mentioned a couple of things I want to share with the audience. One was, you know, all lead generation flows through you and you do wear a marketing hat. When you say that, and you also mentioned that you're looking for the right person, which is the standard, you know, out of the box predictable revenue, what we're trying to do is get an internal referral. Are there other things that you found now that you're a seasoned veteran at this that you are deploying as part of your lead gen efforts over at VoxGen?
So the core of it is what you said, trying to identify the right person. We're actually going into some other areas of just mixing things up, essentially. So obviously, you know, the brutal truth that no one wants to talk about really is salespeople or lead gen representatives that don't pick up the phone fail, right? So the system, while really email focused and all that, needs to be really supplemented by the phone and all that. So that's really important. But to your question of what else are we doing, we're starting to incorporate texting. We're trying to not necessarily use social. That's really good for awareness purposes. But we've actually had, you know, opportunities and meetings set up through the text channel. So really just trying to open up the, you know, all the methods of contact, almost in our business of how we preach and do our selling of channel preference and the like. I want to do the same thing, the lead gen process. There are some people that want to email and respond there. There are others that want to do a phone call. And there are some that want to text you. So really it's just being open and trying to adapt to, you know, the scenario of how we can best communicate with our prospect in the way they want to.
Right. And I think, again, you mentioned your prospect, which means you really have a good understanding of the buying personas, what we call buyer personas, or the people who are going to enter and exit throughout the top of funnel for sure. Whether they're direct influencers or indirect influencers, you've spent a great deal of time kind of mapping who these people are, how they prefer to communicate, and that's what sounds like you've started looking into texting as part of that. But at the end of the day, you really need to get these folks on the phone in order to have that fit call, to have that, you know, the AWAF is what we call it, the Are We a Fit sequence, and then move them over to discovery and then qualification. So what role do you think the phone plays? Because predictable revenue doesn't really talk about the phone a lot. Mm-hmm. What have you discovered in doing this process for as long as you have in terms of the phone? When is it appropriate to start with the phone? And when is it appropriate to blend the phone in to the sequence?
Yeah, so there are different touch points. You know, the one thing that I've seen is, as I just mentioned a minute ago, in the form of, you know, some people want to communicate over the phone. You know, there are individuals in an organization that will only talk to you via phone. They may never look at their email. They just get too bogged down, or your email will go straight to their spam folder or something like that. So they want to talk to you via phone, and you'll get them that way. And, you know, you might catch them at the wrong time or anything similar, but you know, you will at least have a better chance of connecting with them that way. Same goes for email and texting and any of the other channels that you want. But really the phone, will even drive email response or views, right? So using, you know, the modern day BDR process or, outreach process is really, you know, having the right tools in place is really important, right? To understand and have the sequence really automated essentially. But having the insight into who's viewing, who's clicking, who's responding, and refining your message kind of through a continuous improvement type of process. So going back to phone, you will find that in some cases, if you don't talk to them or you leave a voicemail for that matter, it will influence an email view or response or something along those lines. Even further, when you ask, you know, what is the right message? How do you use phone? Sometimes it's not best to leave a voicemail every time. Right. In some cases, you want to mix up and see what works. Call at the right time. Don't just call to call. But leaving a voicemail versus not, in some cases, you may want to call multiple times a day, because if you think of just your own personal life of getting phone calls, if you get a phone call, just one you don't recognize, you may not choose to answer. If you call later on in the day, same phone number, which you have recall at this point from the prospect perspective, or even a third time, of course, you don't want to go to as far as being a pest or something similar. But at that point, you'd be like, this actually might be important. Let me take it. So it's playing to those elements of, okay, how can I really get my prospect to talk to me, right? And not in a manner that is going to piss them off or even put them in a you're starting from a position of weakness, or they're upset or anything like that, but really coming from, you know, hey, I was just trying to help. can you help me? That sort of thing. Can you do me a favor? And really kind of back into that. But phone will either drive email response, you'll get the person on the phone, or you can mix up and have some other areas of real recall to keep the conversation going or in their mind or build awareness or anything like that.
That's great. Yeah, I think the underlying theme here is that you've obviously tested a bunch of different scenarios and have come up with a cadence and a sequence that works and that you're continually iterating and fine-tuning. So for those of you on the phone who are listening to this, one of the big key takeaways that Evan's been successful and why he's been successful is because he continually is testing and continually iterating his process for his folks. And he's got, like most of you may not, he's got European and US, which are two different cultures that he's also got to deal with. Can you share a little bit about that, Evan? Have you found differences in the way that you have to handle the sequences for UK or Europe versus the Americas?
Sure. There's a lot of similarities, but there's also some just little minor differences that just go a long way, right? Everything from writing to approach style and the like, it's really just even phone-based, the way how they have their on the outreach, they have a lot of switchboards. So in turn, you can actually get directly to the person you want without having to go through a gatekeeper of some sort. Really beneficial phone-wise. Mm-hmm. So it is different, but there are a lot of similarities just in the form of, being consistent, right? But circling back to what Mary Lou mentioned earlier was around knowing your customer, your prospect, your buyer, the persona, and defining all of that and understanding what their particular pain may be, right? Both from strategic, financial, or personal, for that matter. And understanding, what would this person be thinking about? What would get them on the phone? Why would they want to talk to you? And how can you really help them? So it's really important that we found, across both markets that, the prospects really choose to meet with you for their reasons, right? Not yours. So how can you really, play to that? And of course, really be a consultant with a purpose is really what I like, right? You're helping them, listening, really trying to help them solve their unique problems and challenges. Not really advancing your own agenda, but essentially you're a salesperson, you're working from that. And they're not oblivious to that fact. They know you are, but if you can help them, you're now coming from a position of, equal strength versus others. So talking about, again, the separation of US, UK, a lot of the same, just more cultural differences of approach and anything similar.
Okay.
One thing I would like to mention, kind of as you talked about, and I would like to absolutely agree with Mary Lou in the form of, analytics and understanding this, how to improve the process is really, really important, right? The good thing is there's a lot of great data out there that's publicly available that, organizations like HubSpot or, insert marketing automation company here can put out for you. But the one thing I'd like to say that it's just best practice, right? Best practice doesn't work for everyone, right? And you ultimately still have to make it your own. And when Mary Lou talks about the persona and defining your customer and prospect and understanding their pain, you can talk best practice all day, but it's really important to define those characteristics and continue to work to refine based off of your changing and adapting sales model and business. To capture those and ensure you're always having the right message going to the market. And in turn, your team is trained enough to be able to communicate that effectively. So just want to highlight that. It's really important and one of the key takeaways that we really take from the Predictable Revenue book and, of course, Mary Lou's teachings.
Well, it's interesting because I'm on this high, what do they call that when you get on your soapbox? I've been on kind of a rant the last month or so about personas because a lot of times when I am in a sales organization and we're talking about personas and it's a larger organization, not the people who wear multiple hats, but there's a director of marketing, a director of sales ops, a director of sales. Sales will tell me our marketing department does buyer personas. And that really kind of gets the skin crawling in the back of my neck because, as you just said, Evan, the sales conversation drives the persona, the morphing of the persona. It drives the iteration of the persona. Because you're on the phone, you're learning language, you're learning whether or not your pain points are resonating, you're learning the priority in which your pain points are resonating, and all of that may not get back to marketing. So sales really has to own their version of the buyer persona, and they have to constantly change and update it so that it's a working document as you get smarter and learn more as you go through the funnel, whether it be, you know, where we are, which is from cold to qualified. But Evan, you also, you know, branched out into qualified to close one. There's a lot of conversation pieces that, that feed back into that persona development. Do you agree with that?
I absolutely do. You know, the just understanding, again, as I mentioned earlier, the motivations of individuals, right?
Right.
You know, there's a reason, you know, whether they respond to you by phone, text message, email, you know, insert channel here, there's a reason they've done it, right? Before you ever get on the phone with them, it's good to try and figure out what that is, right? And defining the personas and understanding what their particular reason or motivation or pain or anything similar, understanding that helps you go a long way. Now, of course, you know, best laid plans can go a totally different direction, right? But you know, I have a fundamental kind of belief of never really ask a question that you don't already have a good sense of the answer to, right? And I always start off all of my calls with, of course, setting the agenda to understand what the prospect is, what's expected of them, and really making sure that we cover all the key points of the call. But I always open up with, out of curiosity, what was your interest in the call? Is there anything specific you want to talk about? And that helps define, you know, what they want to get out of this, and they'll speak openly. And sometimes you got to crawl, claw it back and open it up and get it out of them a little bit. But, helping, you know, I'm not going to ask that question if I don't, again, already have an idea based off their title, how they responded initially, or anything like that. All that information, you know, of course, goes into the persona of who this person is, and really why they're on the phone with you. So,
yeah, no, that's great. I think if one thing comes of the work that we're doing, both in the podcast and my new book and things, is to really get sales to start saying, wow, we need to own that buyer persona. We need to really use that not as a document that's produced once a quarter or once every year by marketing, but it's something that we constantly are updating because we're learning and getting smarter as we start having conversations with people. Because, yeah, you know, Evan, like you said, if you open that Pandora's box of what would you like to get out of the call today, and they give you a 180, you know,
you gotta pivot,
and you have to be ready. Exactly. And then those wrap up notes, which I want you to share with the folks on the phone, how you wrap up these calls, if you do anything special, or if you've taught your team to do anything special. But those wrap up notes are just gold in putting back into the persona definitions, reworking your email body, sometimes redesigning your content and click-through assets and things, because you're learning exactly what the hot buttons are. So let the email engine help you be smarter and get more people where, you know, more conversations that resonate because you're learning more on that wrap-up.
Yep. I'm happy to answer that. I want to circle back for one second just to share how you talk about the personas and who owns it, marketing or sales or anything like that.
Right.
You know, there's always been the talk, whether it's been published or not, you know, there's always almost a finger pointing game between marketing versus sales in some organizations, right?
Right.
You know, you don't talk about it, it exists. But you know, when you talk about defining those personas and all that, it's important that you guys work together. Because essentially your inside sales team, SDRs, BDRs, are the boots on the ground. They are hearing things, and they represent the face of your organization in many cases, because they're the first contact that will ever be had with someone in the organization. In turn, while that's, you want to make sure from a marketing perspective, they are saying the right things and, communicating the message appropriately. It also, you know, it's meant to be a two-way street. They're the ones that get the best information. This kind of goes into the next topic of wrap-up notes of, you know, sharing that with the marketing teams, regardless if they own it or not, right? Because that further helps, you know, refine message and everything similar. But talking about that, you know, the what you hear from your prospect, you know, is, as much as you can read industry reports or anything like that, of, all right, this is where the market's heading, you know, some organizations maybe there are really as an early adopter, but many organizations may have been a little bit behind, right? And you know, are just getting to some of the places where you know you consider normal, right? But those are the those are their problems, those are their issues, and the pains that they're looking to solve, right? And you want to make sure that, of course, you're working towards the future as well. But you're when it comes to notes and messaging and refining your own messaging, for that matter, it needs to be based off of your prospects' problems, right? And the unique ones that they have. While they may have similarities, everything about them. So it's really important in your notes that you you know. Of course, through the call, you demonstrate a sincere interest in listening to them, learning about them and their business and the like, and solving those unique problems. And in your notes, sharing those, of course, with your internal peers for, you know, message refinement or anything further. It also helps you later on in the sales process when it goes past lead generation, now further into a sale, understanding that. But you use all of this information to rewrite your sequences, you know, the body of the email, and you're using terminology that your customers are actually using versus what you use in your own business, right? So for example, you know, you may, if anyone who's worked in the restaurant industry may know what 86 means, but, you know, if your customer, your table, you know, if you were like, oh, sorry, the steak is 86 today, if they don't know what that means, you know, that doesn't necessarily help them, and you're not communicating effectively to your own prospect. But you use all of this to rewrite, use their language, use their terminology. It's going to help you establish a better connection with them because you feel like you're already talking their language, for that matter, and in turn will only improve your success and everything throughout. And this will go through click-throughs as well. So using that as your call to action to drive, you know, to the website or a particular piece of content or anything similar. But it's a combination of these things, sharing within the organization, making sure you have the notes, because you will find that the work that you do up front, whether it be the first or second call or anything similar, will set the tone all throughout the entirety of the sales process. So it's really important to make sure that it's being shared. And of course, you're always circling back to it. So,
yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, it has a number of different uses for wrap up. As you mentioned, it feeds the email sequence so that you can improve your response rates. You can improve your click-through rates, the click-through to open rates. You can improve your subject lines. So, you know, that's one aspect of it. It also feeds back into your role playing. So if you want to be training on objections that came up or how to start conversations so that people are leaning in and excited about what you have to say. All of these things are really fed by good wrap-up, call wrap-up. And so I'm happy that that you've taken that and really extended that. And as you said, it also helps you as you further go into the pipeline, which, you know, Mary Lou stops at qualified op. But, you know, there's definitely going through the whole proposal process and the presentation process and all the other things that you have to do going when once it's an opportunity to close. Those notes that were taken above are invaluable. Another use for that, and I know that Evan does this, is if somebody falls out of the pipeline and moves into a long-term follow-up or nurture status, Evan now has the ability to create an email sequence for nurture that is organized by top pain point. So when they're ready to actually come back in, they have now been armed with all the reasons why this pain should have a higher sense of urgency. So there's a lot of goodness that comes out of wrap-up.
Fully agree.
Yeah. So we're getting ready to wrap up this call, Evan. Was there anything that you wanted to share with the audience in addition to what you've been so gracious in sharing about your experiences as the head of business development?
Yeah, you know, a few points. You know, as a part of just reaching out, just saying, you know, I'd like 15 minutes of your time just because I want to learn more about you and your company. works surprisingly well with a lot of prospects, right? Just looking to get on the phone because you want to spend time, working with them. Another one is, you know, ensuring that you're organizing your day into, or your team's day, into distinct time blocks with specific activities and concentrating focus on those activities. Eliminating all distractions within those blocks is really essential to increasing performance. If you do the same thing every day, you know, it's just one thing you have to not worry about in the form of, you know, planning your day out or anything similar. You know, depending on your sales organization, you know, lead gen activity and the things you're doing can just for lead gen till you get to the qualified op can take 90 plus days to really pay off. Relentlessly working to fill your own pipeline through a mixture of telephone, in-person, email, social selling, like through LinkedIn or Twitter, which is really more for awareness, text messaging, referrals, networking, inbound leads, or even trade shows is really important. Really be diverse. Don't be stuck on one particular channel and the like. And this is kind of more into the selling side or anything similar, but this helps with some objection handling. But there's a universal law of human behavior that you really can't argue another person into believing that they are wrong. Of course, there's some great elements out there, such as the challenger sale, but it's how you really do it, right? The more you really push the other person, the more they dig their heels in and really resist you. There really is a better way. You know, rather than attempting to overcome, really by defeating or prevailing over your prospect for that matter, really disrupt, right? Disrupt their expectations and their thought patterns when they push back with a no, right? The key really to a disruptive statement or question that turns them around, so they lean towards you rather than move away from you. So for example, when they say they're busy, instead of arguing them into how you only take a little bit of their time, say, I figured you would be, right? They don't expect you to say that, and it really disrupts their thought pattern. Or when they say, just send me some information, right? Tell me specifically what you're looking for, right? You're calling their bluff, you're forcing engagement and everything similar. Or, you know, if they say, I'm not interested, you know, that makes sense. Most people aren't. Right? Their brain isn't ready for you to agree with them. And in turn, you have a chance to really kind of put them, again, not on their heels, but more lean into you, like, okay, why'd you say that? That sort of thing. more of that. So just a few things, you know, I gotta be honest. I really, really am a big proponent of what Mary Lou, her teachings and the process. So she is a process expert. I love what she does. It's the teachings that she has are really essential for any business. So I really commend Mary Lou for all the research that I know goes into putting this stuff together. You know, she's been doing it for years, but it's really been great. And I really appreciate you having me on.
Well, thank you, Evan. So I'm sure people are going to want to know how to get a hold of you. Can you give us a contact information?
Sure. I'm on LinkedIn, Evan Jones at VoxGen. You can email me, ejones@voxgen.com, hopefully with a lot of praise for this great podcast. Or, you know, I'm not afraid to, if anyone wants to call or text, my number is 813-453-7479. I'm here. Feel free to hit me up if you have any questions or anything as it relates to, you know, business development or lead gen. I'm happy to help.
There you go. So you heard three ways to reach Evan. Evan, thank you so much for your time. It's been wonderful speaking with you.
Thanks, Mary Lou.